अश्चात्रानुगुणायो जनवायुराग्ययुक्ताया अशांति आत्मनि चात्मनम् पाक्षिश्रुतग्रहतायां. Translation: the seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering service, devotional service, in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. Thank you very much. It's like being in heaven here. Yeah, actually, we came to Chile yesterday, and it is chilly still here. It's springtime, but Santiago is up in the mountains a little bit, surrounded by mountains. No, there's some snow sometimes, and it's supposed to be hot in the daytime. And tomorrow's Rath Yatra, and very nice active yatra here. All kinds of devotees, Vaidyananda devotees, everything. So we're getting adjusted. It's 2 hours different than Lima, where we were. And we were very anxious to be able to get online here and be able to participate in this Sangha. A very nice association for us in terms of trying to understand who we are and go deeper into devotional service and not just stay on the superficial, you know, surface of it like that. So these first two cantos are Lotus Feet of Krishna. And we find that still, Prabhupada says that the Bhagavad Gita is the culture of the intellect, and that Srimad Bhagavatam is the cultivation of the soul directly. And also in the Vedas, there's the four Samhitas, Rig, Atharva, Yajur, Sama, like that. And then associated with each of those, each one has its brahmanas, its aranyakas, and its Upanishads. And the brahmanas are collections of literature, so the brahmanas can do their sacrifices. They can apply the original samhitas from the Vedas, the Veda. And then after that, aranyaka, it means the forest. So then there's instructions in terms of that particular Veda for the forest dwellers, the vanaprasthas. Yeah? And it seems to be more of that in ISKCON. You know, more and more people are selling their big house, and all the kids are off married and engaging their own lives. And they want their mother and father to come visit sometimes and help them with the grandchildren and give them advice in life and cheer them up. Like that. But then, yeah, they have now parents have a lot of time for their own life again. So then there's usually instructions for the vanaprasthas. And then finally, that's supposed to bring us to the point of sun and nyas. Sun means complete, and nyas means renunciation. So now we completely give it up. Now we're trying to get rid of the bodily conception of life. Yeah? And so then the Upanishads that are associated with each Samhita. And of course, we have the Isu Upanishad, which is a very nice Upanishad. And associated
Hare
with
Krishna,
the...
Hare Krishna, you've reached Rishabhadev Das.
Okay.
Okay.
Then we're the associated with the... What's one? Rig Yajur Sama? With the Ayurveda, I think, yeah, like that. So, but then the Bhagavad Gita is also a deep Upanishad. So, this first canto is starting off with that same mood. You know, it's not very juicy in that sense in some ways. And unless you like, like the prayers of the personified Vedas, which the Acharyas like very much. Prabhupada says that some people say that Shanta Ras is not a Ras. But he says whether you accept it as a Rasa or not is the basis of everything else. Yeah. The lotus feet of Krishna, the first two cantos. But even the gopis, when they start to think of Krishna, they start with his lotus feet, like that. And so there's nothing wrong with you know, being in the highest platform of the gopis and still having wonderful attachment to Krishna's lotus feet. We never give them up. We just increase our attachment to his lotus feet so we can go up to his smiling face like that. It's like the higher the building, the better the foundation has to be. Okay. So these first two cantos, the Prabhu says, to become attached to the lotus feet of Krishna means to recite these first two cantos over and over again, like that. So, in the previous verses, in the last chapter, the sages made their questions, very good questions. And you have to understand, what is this world? What is the goal? What are the avatars? What do they teach us? What is especially the Krishna avatar? Why is it different? Out of all the scriptures, which is the best scripture for us to study? We only have so much time, systematically. And then what is the best dharma? Because there's so many dharmas, so many things we can do, like that. Right now in ISKCON, for example, we're working on these educational programs and trying to develop Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Bhai Bhava. And it's a lot of work, having a real university. And because of that, we're actually coming in contact with real universities, and gradually we're acting properly, and they're appreciating us. But so sometimes you wonder, is this the real goal? This jnana, this jnana, is that the goal? Like that. But then you remember, this is anyabhi lasita shunyam jnana karmati anavritam. We don't want to cover vritta. We don't want to cover our activity for Krishna with jnana. But that shouldn't be our motive. But it can be our desire. That's the subtle difference, as we understand, between abhilas and abhilasita. Anyabhilasita. So specifically, we can be trying to develop jnana, a logical understanding of Krishna's lotus feet or the nectar of devotion. Why? Because our motive is to develop detachment from this world. And once we're detached, well, we're spirit souls. We have to be attached to something. So if Krishna sticks his lotus feet in our face, then we can become attached to his lotus feet. And we can be like Vrindavan Das Thakur. We can suck on his toe. Suck on Vrindavan Das Thakur was when he sucking on Lord Chaitanya's toe, like that. So, tachchadana munayo, the seriously inquisitive student or sage, I hear Prabhupada has taken the word muni as which usually means sage, but he's taking it as student also. Because the muni is somebody, pretty much we're saying, who hasn't come to the real conclusion. The verse before this, right, is Brahman Paramatma Bhagavan Iti. Brahmati Paramatmati Bhagavan Iti Shabdate. So this is the goal. Before this, he's talking about you shouldn't engage in economic development for sense gratification. You shouldn't, engage in developing. Was it do dharma for economic development, unless it's all aimed at mukti. So mukti means liberation. But again, we're not opposed to liberation if it's for this goal of coming to understand Krishna. And Krishna can be understood as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And you meet some people like that, very nice people. They, in all circumstances, they're peaceful, they're calm. They're friendly, they're generous, Brahman. And some of them start to become poets, and go inside and become intuitive, and have the techniques and methods. They begin to become iconographic thinkers rather than linear thinkers. Jnana, then they become Paramatma bodies, and that takes them to see Krishna, the hand of Krishna in everything. So now in this verse, he's going ahead and explaining, coming to bhakti. So see a Prabhupada's purport. The absolute truth, which is described in the last verse, is realized in full by the process of devotional service to the Lord. Vasudev. Or the personality of Godhead, who is the full-fledged absolute truth. So from the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, from the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, it starts off with the goal being Vasudev. So again, I would suggest that's a strategy, because we're coming from the Upanishadic level to start to approach Krishna as a person. So Vasudev can be the all-pervasive one, he who lives everywhere, Prabhupada says. Yeah? But also it can be the son of Vasudev. Vasudev gives birth to Vasudev. Yeah? So in the very beginning, devotees can be thinking of Krishna entering Dwarka. It's a very beautiful picture, you know, with the ocean down below and Grisena and others, you know, walking with Krishna to receive him and come back from Hastinapur. And very blessed ladies throwing flowers at his feet, and rich and prosperous merchants offering him the beautiful gifts which his servants then collect, you know, and take for him. Yeah? Yeah. So we can be thinking of Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya in that sense. Yeah? And of course, I don't know exactly how it relates to Krishna and Goloka, but at least it's going to take us to Dwarka. Yeah. So the absolute truth is realized in full by the process of devotional service to the Lord, Vasudev, or the personality of Godhead, who is the full-fledged absolute truth. Brahman is his transcendental body, bodily effulgence. Transcendental bodily effulgence. And Paramatma is his partial representation. As such, Brahman or Paramatma realization of the absolute truth is but a partial realization. There are four different types of human beings: the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, and the devotees. That's it. There's not a fifth kind of human being. The karmis are materialistic, whereas the other three are transcendental. The first class transcendentalists are the devotees, who have realized the Supreme Person. The second class transcendentalists are those who have partially realized the plenary portion of the absolute truth. Partially realized the plenary portion of the absolute truth. And the third class transcendentalists are those who have barely realized the spiritual focus of the absolute person. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures, the Supreme Person is realized by devotional service, which is backed by full knowledge and detachment from material association. We have already discussed the point that devotional service is followed by knowledge and detachment from material association. Vasudeva, Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga, Prayojitaha, Jinayati, Ashuvairagyam, Jnanam Chaya, the Hoy to come. As Brahman and Paramatma realization are imperfect realizations of the Absolute Truth, so the means of realizing Brahman and Paramatma, i.e., that is, the paths of Jnana and Yoga, are also imperfect means of realizing the Absolute Truth. Devotional service, which is based on the foreground of full knowledge combined with detachment from material association, and which is fixed by the oral reception of the Vedanta Shruti, is the only perfect method by which the seriously inquisitive student can realize the absolute truth. Yeah. So I would say here that Vedanta Shruti is talking about, for us, it's included in the Bhagavatam. What we're hearing right now, you might say, is Vedanta Shruti. Yeah. Yeah. And because of this, then we become fixed. You know, devotional services for women and fools. Yeah. So, no, it's for everybody. Yeah, it's for the people who transcended their body in a great Paramahamsas. Yeah. And so we're fixed in that because we're hearing the Vedanta Shruti, you know, these Upanishadic aspects of the Bhagavatam, you know, keep us in this level so we can talk with anybody, big scholars. Yeah. Devotional service is not therefore meant for the less intelligent class of transcendentalists. There are three classes of devotees, okay? There's four classes of people, and one of those is the devotees. Now there's three classes of devotees, namely first, second, and third class. The third class devotees are the neophytes. Let's see how Prabhupada defines these, because each time there's like a different, you know, look at the same beautiful sculpture. The third class devotees are the neophytes, who have no knowledge and are not detached from material association, but who are simply attracted by the preliminary process of worshiping the deity in the temple, are called material devotees. So here I would say, in our case, you know, the deity in the temple can be the Maha Mantra in the Sunday feast, and people just like to chant Hare Krishna. And you see many people that come to festivals, like the Woodstock Festival in Europe, and they just like chanting, and they're attracted to it. And then that's the preliminary process of the worship of the deity in Kali Yuga. But they have no knowledge about what Hare Krishna is, and they have no detachment. Yeah. Material devotees are more attached to material benefit than transcendental profit. Therefore, one has to make definite progress in the position of material devotional service to the second class devotional position. In the second class position, the devotee can see four principles in the devotional line, namely, the personality of Godhead, his devotees, the ignorant and the envious. One has to raise himself at least to the stage of the second class devotee and thus become eligible to know the absolute truth. Yeah. So maybe at that level, Majjhima Adhikari, we can really know Krishna, but in terms of loving him, then we have to go to higher levels of Majjhima Adhikari. Yeah. A third class devotee therefore has to receive the instructions of devotional service from the authoritative sources of Bhagavata. The number one Bhagavata is the established personality of devotee. And the other Bhagavata is the message of Godhead. The third class devotee, therefore, has to go to the personality of devotee in order to learn the instructions of devotional service. Such a personality of devotee is not a professional man who earns his livelihood by the business of Bhagavatam. Such a devotee must be a representative of Shukadeva Goswami, like Suda Goswami, and must preach the cult of devotional service for the all-around benefit of all people. A neophyte devotee has very little taste to hear from the authorities. Such a neophyte devotee makes a show of hearing from a professional man to satisfy his senses. This sort of hearing and chanting has spoiled the whole thing. So one should be very careful about the faulty process. The holy messages of Godhead, as inculcated in the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, are undoubtedly transcendental subjects. But even though they are so, such transcendental matters are not to be received from the professional man who spoils them as a serpent spoils milk simply by the touch of his tongue. So what comes to mind for us is that now especially, you know, before, maybe it wasn't so much, but now ISKCON is growing very much as an institution. There's this comment that many organizations, businesses, they keep their purity, their focus, when they're struggling to exist, struggling to expand, because that's what makes them go on, is why are we doing this? What is our mission? Yeah? And then when they start to become prosperous, then they're really challenged not to become just attached to the superficial benefits, you know, of the organization. They lose their mission. And so there's a statement that more businesses are destroyed by success than are destroyed by, you know, by challenge, by economic challenge like that. So I see that this is becoming a big problem in ISKCON, because a big challenge in ISKCON, because in India, you know, for example, I was in the temple in Calcutta, and it's nice, it's being cleaned up, it's being painted. If you know the temple, for many years, somebody else had the downstairs section, but now they've got control of that, and they're putting in a nice little area in front of the temple. They're putting in a very nice snack shop, you know, like that. And it's just becoming quite opulent and beautiful. And then the process is systematized. So they have so many programs at universities now. And just, you know, here's a taste of it. Here's an interesting thing to control your stress. We know what your situation is in terms of economic development and social relations. And so here's something to improve it, like that. And then, after getting more involved, understanding the process a little bit, chanting, becoming a higher neophyte, okay, then every year, maybe every 3 months or something, they have regular one week or two week, intensive programs, probably designed during the semester breaks for the students. And then the people come and they spend like maybe one whole week, you know, with the full process, morning program, evening program, service during the day. And at the end of that time, I think it's something like about maybe 15% of the boys become full-time devotees. And that's a lot. You know? And so when you go to the Mangalarti program, there's so many young men, like from, you know, maybe 18 up to about 23, all dressed the same in their bhakti uniforms, packed full. And over on one side is a cordoned off area for ladies. And sometimes there's no ladies there at Mangalarti. Or sometimes there's two, you see a daughter, a lady and a daughter, or two or three, maybe four or five, you know. But a very enthusiastic kirtan, and people know the verses and things like that. So in India, they're growing, and what I observe is at least one, if not more, maybe two or three big temples are opening every year, you know, with as much building space as our Los Angeles temple completely. You know, and standard thing is very opulent deity worship, a big guest house, maybe accommodations for maybe like, you know, 50 rooms or something, 60. And then that's the next one, deity worship, guest house and a nice restaurant, and then systematic care for the congregation. For example, Janmashtami, there may be like 700 people in line to take darshan of how the deities are dressed very opulently. And every one of them gets a nice little package of Mahaprasad, like that. Yeah. So it's very easy to start becoming a materialistic guru and giving Srimad Bhagavatam classes, because you have your position, very comfortable position in ISKCON. Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it describes the contamination for sannyas, is that one can eat good food and not have to work. That's one definition of sannyas. Eat good and not have to work. Yeah. And yeah, you become familiar with the logic, you become familiar with these things, but you become, you know, really you like your position, your little perks, flower garland, this and that. Go for walks with people following behind you, you know, jaya prabhu, like that. So something, you know. But of course, you know, you're not satisfied with this, and Krishna keeps pushing you, and, you know, he's hoping that the institution will become more than 60% pure, maybe the institution will become 70% pure. Yeah? How much can the institution become pure in Kali Yuga? That's a question. Okay? How much can the individuals and the different associations within the institution become pure? So very much this danger that we become neophyte devotees, we engage in devotional service in ISKCON, so there are different benefits we get. You want to start a business, okay, join an ISKCON center with a big congregation, get the members to participate in your business, buy automobiles from you. Okay? You can probably keep yourself maintained just by buying good used cars and selling them properly. Okay? This is in your community, maybe, and associate with devotees. And then you go to class every day just so people see you there. And you haven't got much taste for it, but you do it as a ritual, like that. And so then you stay on this neophyte platform. Okay? So, a sincere devotee must therefore be prepared to hear the Vedic literature, like the Upanishads and Vedanta and other literatures left by the previous authorities or Goswamis, for the benefit of his progress. So we should actually be getting benefit out of hearing these first cantos. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. And without hearing and following the instructions, the show of devotional service becomes worthless, and therefore a sort of disturbance in the path of devotional service. Okay? Because devotional service is adoshrada, sadhusanga, bhajana kriya, mahinaya vritti, nishta, fixed in following the instructions. And then cultivating a taste, ruchi, nishta, ruchi, and then becoming attached to Krishna, asakti. So always going to be in the association of devotees, hearing and chanting. Yeah? And then bhava. The show of devotional service becomes worthless, a disturbance. Unless, therefore, devotional service is established on the principles of Shruti, Smriti, Purana, or other Pancharatra authorities, the make show of devotional service should at once be rejected. Wow, you haven't going to wait a long time. This reminds me of Madan Mohan's advice. We shouldn't take the time to put Maya in focus. Seems like Maya. Let me get a good focus on her. Oh, yeah, it's Maya. I should reject her. Is it really Maya? Yeah, it's Maya. I should reject her. Okay. No. Should be rejected immediately. A good horse runs even at the shadow of a whip. An authorized devotee should never be recognized. An unauthorized devotee should never be recognized as a pure devotee. By assimilation of such messages from the Vedic literatures, one can see the all-pervading, localized aspect of the personality of Godhead within his own self constantly. This is called samadhi. So we're reading our Bhakti Bhai Bhava program. It's very nice because it's just details, basically, more details, different perspectives on the same thing. But in the instructions of Lord Kapila, a couple things come up very nice. And one of them is this: the Prabhupada defines a guru as somebody who knows his relationship with the Paramatma. He knows his relationship with the Paramatma. So it seems like this would be the lowest level in some ways of defining a guru, if he's come to this level of realizing the hand of God. Yeah, he knows that I'm a servant. I'm a servant of Krishna. And with the Paramatma, we're not going to have a rasa with the Paramatma, other than Shantaras. He's the boss, I'm the servant. Yeah. And I'm on a very neophyte level in terms of serving him. somebody came back from the oracle in Delphi to Athens, and Socrates saw him and said, "My friend, where have you been?" And he said, "Oh, I've been in, to see the oracle." And he said, "What question did you ask? What kind of divine message did you get?" And the person kind of smiled with a twinkle in his eye and said, "Socrates, I asked who's the wisest man in Athens." And Socrates said, "Well, what was the answer? Did you get an answer?" And the person smiled and said, "Socrates, they said it was you." So Socrates was aghast by this. He said, "How can this be? There's so many people in Athens with great schools and so many followers, and I'm just a guy in the marketplace wrangling my ideas." He said, I'm gonna visit some of these places and talk with them, and I'm sure I'll find somebody more intelligent than me." So he came back and he saw his friend in the evening, and the friend said, "But what's the result, Socrates?" And Socrates said, "It's very amazing." And he said, "I know I'm a fool. I know I'm a fool. I'm trying to understand the truth. I have a little bit of wisdom." He said, "But these other people, they also don't have the absolute truth. But the problem is, they think they do. They're very proud. So I guess maybe I am the wisest man in Athens, if you take it as knowing my position of being a fool," like that. So I say one of the essential things of understanding the Paramatma and our relation is to understand where we're at. And we have a little bit of knowledge, we have a little bit of development, but mostly we're all in Maya. We're always in the Brahman effulgence, trying to look and see what information the Paramatma is giving us from moment to moment. We go from Brahman to Paramatma every now and again just to check in. Yeah? And the Paramatma says, "Hey, you've gotten way off here. Get back over to the left. To the left. There you go. Okay, you're back on track again. Okay, go ahead now." And we step off to Brahman and kind of looking at our sense gratification out of the corner of our eyes. Some like cookies, some like Coca-Cola, some like speculation, some like clothes, some like honor. Okay, out of the corner of the eye. And then, maybe, someday we'll actually come to the point of being absorbed in the association of pure devotees all the time. Even though we're at work, even though we're, whatever we're doing, we're on this level of absorbing Krishna's pastimes in Goloka. Even externally, we're living in the material world, physical world. So, it's a very nice verse. Suda Goswami is going through a very nice background, building a very nice palace for Radha and Krishna to live in, brick by brick, solid. Okay? And he's saying now that we shouldn't be engaged in the four principles of Vanashram, the karma, the dharma, artha, karma, moksha, unless it's for moksha. Now, moksha is vairagya. And vairagya, jnana and vairagya, then we can understand the absolute truth of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And he's saying here that the student can do this when he's really, engaged in this jhana, and then he gets to vairagya, and then he's engaged in bhakti, shruti, smriti, puranad, adi, pancharatrika, vinyana, I can't remember that one. Then you can really get the focus of going from being to second-class devotee, to first-class devotee. Like that. So that's all the comprehension we have. Anybody else have any comments or questions like that?
Maharaj, give me a second here to unmute everybody. Kind of complicated because I've got one screen in front of me, one computer.
Muted.
Oops. No.
Unmuted.
There. Now I did it. Okay. So I unmuted everybody. If anyone would like to make a comment or question for Maharaj, we're ready. Anybody?
Well, if nobody jumps in, I'll ask a question. Maharaj, you made a statement that the second-class devotee may know Krishna, but we have to go to the first-class platform to love Krishna. So my question would be, how can one know Krishna and not love Krishna? Remember the song back from the 60s or the 50s, to know him is to love him?
Yeah, because the different kinds of knowledge. And so we get, for example, like the four Kumaras, they came to Vishuddha Sattva. They came right to the doorway of Vaikuntha. They could look inside, they could see all the things happening, the conveyances, all for Krishna, all to serve Krishna. So they knew, and they saw him, you know, face to face. He came to the door like that, you know. But then where's the goddess of fortune? Where's Bhakti Devi? And then also then Durvasa Muni, the same thing, went right to the doorway of Vaikuntha and talked to Narayan and got information how to solve his problem. You know, so that in Vishuddha Sattva, it's pure. There's pure knowledge of Krishna, but still there's been no prema hasn't awakened. This is bhava bhakti. Bhava is the beginning, the first ray of prema is there. That's what's the word. I can't remember what it is now. Maya. Krishna Surya Sam, Maya Haya Andakar, Yahan Krishna Taha Nahi Maya Adikar. That's just probably explained this way again and again, that on this level of bhava, Maya can't influence us. There's no ignorance. You know exactly who you are. You know, I'm an apple. I'm not a pear. I'm not a peach. I'm not a banana. You know, but I'm not a ripe apple. I'm a green golden delicious. Okay. Yeah. So that's bhava. You know who you are in your relationship to Krishna. Yeah. But now all you have to do is to mature yourself. And then Krishna can relish you. He can relish you then. And you'll be relishable. And that's prema. Prema is the aggregate of the rasas. So there can't be any exchange of juice on the level of bhava. It's pure knowledge. Vasudeva-sattva. It's the beginning. That's the whole point. It's beginning. You know? But it's not really substantial. It's not the actual real thing yet. Like that. You know? Maybe like a smell of the apple is there. You know? So that's the position that in maybe Majjhima Adhikara, as far as I understand the definitions, it goes from initiation, which is the Bhajana Kriya, which means the second initiation, Diksha, where you can appreciate the form of Krishna, and now you engage in worshiping the deity properly with appreciation and a form. But appreciation now, no longer Kanista. Yeah? And then you can see everything, how the deity is present in different people, four categories. And then you go up to that, you know, was it Natanavirti, Nishta, Ruchi, Raga Nuga Bhakti, Ruchi, Asakti. And now you're addicted. And you just can't live, you know, without association of devotees. You can go on Sankirtan maybe and if you buy yourself or your books there, you just can't live if Krishna doesn't send you some nice, innocent person to talk to. It's just like you're chanting and praying. So you've got to have that. And Krishna reciprocates. Yeah? So that taste is there. But again, this is not prema. Yeah? And because of that, asaktis, we become attached to Krishna. And we're detached in the material world. And then bhava, at that level, you can burn off all the final anarthas which are covering our vision. And then we can have perfect knowledge of Krishna. Right? And in that perfect knowledge, then, to really know him, you know, is to love him. So, you know, I love Prabhu, I love Prasadam. What do we love? Is it sense gratification? Kubja. This is a nice question for you. I'll ask you this question. Did Kubja love Krishna? She's the Prabhupada said that she's she's what's it called? It's a Shakti. She's the Shakti that wants to enjoy Krishna. It's like somebody who refuses to take anything but Mahaprasadam or Prasadam. Prasadam. He'll never eat anything but Prasadam, but he wants good Prasadam. Satisfying. So Prabhupada says Krishna associates with this Shakti sometimes, but not all the time. And with the Shakti who only wants to serve Krishna and give herself for Krishna's satisfaction, then he associates with her all the time. Yeah. So that's what my comprehension is that in a higher Madhyamadhikar, you're beginning to see Krishna and everything else. And of course, again, it's not like, you know, in boxes. So I just say that right from, you know, from, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, like Narada Muni, right from the very beginning, he's getting some really intense experiences by mercy. Prabhupada says by the mercy of Krishna, that we're able to do this. Yeah. So maybe from the beginning, there's some prema, you know. But it's not the real foreground of our service. So that's what I would understand.
Good answer. I like that. Thank you. Very nice.
Maharaj, I would like to ask a question. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, very clear.
Good, good, okay. Well, Skype has been merciful to us today.
All glories to Bill Gates.
Yeah, maybe he's getting some benefit there. He's a shot of me. You know, in this verse, it's specifically addressing the Paramatma. The previous verse, it's defining the absolute truth in three aspects. And then this next verse, immediately following it, it's talking about realization of the absolute truth in his Paramatma feature. Is that significant?
Yeah, I think, again it's this progressive level. The very last sentence probably says, by assimilation of such messages, which is what is bhaktya-shruta-bhrinati, that word will appear again too. Bhaktya-shruta-bhrinati. By assimilation of such messages from the Vedic literatures, one can see the all-pervading, localized aspect of the personality of Godhead within his own self constantly. This is called samadhi. Like that, yeah? So, yeah, again, I think maybe what you're actually presenting it, if you look at it, we'll see that. Because, again, it's what's spiral. That he's gone all the way from Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, but now he's talked about all three, right? In the last one, he said that the Vedanti Tat Tat Vadadas, or Tatvam Jnanam Yajnanam Advayam, Brahmati, Paramatmati, Bhagavanati, everything. That the transcendentalist, Vedanti Tat Tat Vadadas, Tatvam Yajnanam Advayam, but those who have realized this Advayam Jnanam, this undifferentiated Brahman, they realize that that's Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So he hasn't, you know, he's not focusing on Bhagavan yet, right? He's presenting all three as being the absolute truth. And so now in the purport, maybe Prabhupada's, many times when Prabhupada does this, you know, in the purports, Prabhupada's following the child, you know, hitting right in the middle. You know, we're not going to talk about Bhagavan. We're not going to talk about Brahman. We're talking about especially focusing on the progressive stage, you know, which is Paramatma, and to become a real Goswami. You know, it doesn't matter what ashram you're in, whatever, become a real Goswami. And that's the progressive stage. Kind of one point is that if you actually are a real Goswami, where's this one now? Paramatmati? Ah, where's that? I have a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, yeah. Paramatmati, Bhagavanmati, what is it? Anyway, what it says, I forgot the verse, is that the devotee and the Paramatma levels, the level is in touch with the Super Soul. And this level of Paramatma is in touch with the Super Soul, And therefore, in some ways, you don't need books anymore. You don't need books, exactly, because you're always in contact with the super soul who's giving you guidance. Of course, the super soul is always telling you to read books. but now you're reading them, you know, with a very personal feeling that Prabhupada is talking to you, you know, and he's giving you advice, which fits right into your level of education like that. You know. So in that sense, about the devotee and the level of, you know, that level, kind of this Bhagavad Gita verse is rolling around in my heart there, you know, that he sees the Paramatma, you know, so he doesn't exactly need these instructions, you know, like that. That's what my understanding of being is too, the higher Madhyamadhikari, he's fixed pretty much, and feeling, he's feeling the hand of God, you know, the voice of God, hey, calm down, yeah, go to class, yeah, like that, yeah. It's okay?
I could add Maharaj Dandavats. Nice to hear.
Oh, Hare Krishna.
Dandavats. I can add a little something to that. It was interesting how Prabhupada went through the first class, second class, third class, then he goes to the progression of devotees. And it is interesting. That caught my attention also, that the purport ends up in Paramatma. But the way, after thinking about it, the way I thought of it was that the spiritual master, he's a representative of Krishna, and he is the external manifestation of Super Soul. So someone who's realized Paramatma is like you're saying, he's now the books, you know, are secondary to this realization that he has, a constant realization of having in a devotee. Paramatma is not some, it's mentioned as a plenary portion of Vishnu, but it's actually his connection with Krishna. So the spiritual master, non-different than Krishna, representative of Krishna, he's pleased with the disciple, and the disciple receives his mercy, and now he's connected with Chaita Guru, with the Paramatma within the heart.
And leave it with you, mm-hmm. because...
And there's, what the verse 2 always, when you said that, came to my mind, which is, what's the one? Oh, my goodness. Chintamani? Prakara 7? No. It's the other one. Yeah. That he always sees Krishna within his heart. Premanjana charita bhakti vinochanena santasa daiva vireishu balokayanti. So, if we're seeing the light reflected off the wall, but if we have the proper orientation, you look at the light bulb, and it's the filament inside of it. If it's like a 10-watt light bulb, not too bright. So, mm-hmm. 10 watts, we can actually see the filament. Wow, that's where it's coming from, the twisty wire. So, If the gopis and everybody else, when they see the Paramatma, they see right through the Paramatma. It was interesting because Prabhupada says that the Paramatma body, he has a partial realization of the plenary portion. He doesn't have a full realization of the plenary portion like that. Yeah. It's still indirect a little bit. Maybe he can see the light bulb. You know, but he can't see the filament inside of it yet. You know, but yeah.
But a devotee, his Paramatma realization is different than a yogi.
Exactly. He sees right through the Paramatma to Krishna. Okay, manjana charita bhakti vilona janena. And shama sundaram chanta guna saritam. Or else he must be wrong.
I have a question, though. It caught my attention in the verse and also in the purport early on. Why is the emphasis on Vedanta Shruti? You know, in the end, Prabhupada includes Shruti, Smriti, Purana, Pancharatra. There are smarta Brahmins and impersonalists that only accept Shruti, and they reject Smriti Shastras, Puranas. And so why the emphasis here? This is Bhagavatam. Why the emphasis on Shruti?
But I would say it's the same thing. It's only the first canto. It's just the lotus feet of Krishna. And so you see, for example, what is the best dharma? Svaipumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir at hoksaja. Yeah. And so again and again in this first canto? Yeah, second chapter. I don't know if Krishna's name is mentioned or not, but he's called Vasudeva, he's called Adhokshaja, you know, like that. You know? And then, of course, Prabhupada keeps translating it as Krishna, personality of Godhead. But if you read it, just the Sanskrit, it's very Upanishadic, you know, like that. Yeah. And but it's, I think it's there. I think probably we'll find like one verse or something where he just says it, Krishna. And in the whole first canto, the only real Ras chapter pretty much seems to be Krishna enters Dwarka. And that thing of Krishna enters Dwarka. Because then you get the taste of all the Dwarkavasis running like little children, so bubbling over, they can't really control themselves, you know. Little kids running to see their father after he's been away a long time. Yeah. So then I get a real feeling of Rasa. But with Kunti, she says she can't understand Yashoda. And Bhishma is seeing Parthasarathi with four hands, and the ladies in Hastinapur on the roof are thinking of Mahavishnu, like that. Yeah. But if we get this fixed, you know, then we're Marja Madhukara, then we're in a position to advance, really, you know, and like that. Very with a Mishta, you know. Like that. Yeah.
Madhyam's also, it is interesting, this encouraging someone to come to the Madhyam platform. It also means a platform of discrimination, and Prabhupada's warning us, you know, to develop the vision of who's a devotee and who's not, to understand who's, you know, unauthorized, who's authorized. And it appears that Prabhupada's talking about the unfortunate Indians who are hearing from professional Bhagavatam reciters who are materially motivated. But by extension, you know, and Prabhupada's saying very clearly that unless somebody comes to the Madhyam platform, he's not even eligible to know the absolute truth. He doesn't have vision. He doesn't have that discriminating power. So by extension, the principle can be expanded to say, you know, you have to hear from someone who's not materially motivated. You have to hear from devotees who are practicing spiritual life and that have themselves come to the Madhyam platform. You have to have that discrimination.
Well, otherwise, you know, you're getting it because the devotees are organizing the Sunday feast, they're having really good halava, nice sweet rice, you know. I know devotees, one temple, actually, I named the temple, I won't name the temple, I guess I'll name it away too, okay. One temple, there are some devotees who are, been devotees for maybe like, you know, 15, 20 years. And what they do is every time before the Sunday feast, they get together with their friends, and they smoke marijuana, okay, and they go to the Sunday feast and they have a really intense kirtan, really intense feast, and afterwards they're a crew that the temple president can count on without, you know, fail, to always clean up the whole temple, put everything away. But that's your situation. It's like, you know, for them, Krishna consciousness is getting together and having a real good, you know, sense gratification like that. So it's Kanista Adhikari, but because the Madhyam Adhikaris and the Prabhupada, everybody are keeping it together, then they have a chance, like you're saying, to get in touch with it. They have no knowledge of everything else, and without Krishna. I see so many people, too. It's incredible. I mean, in South America especially. So many times our temple, they're surrounded by, you know, Rajneesh centers or Ritvik centers, like that. It's the place within two, three blocks of the temple. You know? And so it's like they have to be opposed to Krishna. Or they have to be opposed to ISKCON, you know, somehow or other to keep their focus, you know, like that. You know? I guess, actually, I had a knock on the door here. We're supposed to go to our next program now. So, well, thank you so much, everybody, for your association. And for me, I tell everybody, it's just so nice for me to get a chance to participate in these programs in my spiritual situation. And I thank Ramananda for organizing all these. And then, we're going to be here. I think next week should be pretty good, too, to try and organize this Thursday, next Thursday. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we'll be in Valparaiso. But it should be okay there. And we're going to do some nice university programs. It's coming. It's so pray to God. My God, that's why it's happening. But these university programs are becoming actually pretty good here in South America. The head of San Marcos, which is the biggest, it's the oldest university in the Western, in South America, with the University of Mexico, it's the oldest in the Western world. And so many years of our stupid, you know, incompetent efforts, but they're appreciating the quality of the content, everything. And so now the head of the liberal arts and sciences, you know, which is half the university or more, Mark Martos, he's a big professor. He's head of the International Spanish Language Association. They're the guys who decide what is, you know, proper language, everything else, awards. So a very big professor. So we did a Live the Bhagavad art exhibition to start off our regular 2-week symposium. And he came this time personally. Before, he sent his greetings and sent a representative, but this time the head of literature was there, who's come before, and now he came also. And then I asked, well, do you have a course on world literature? And he said, yes, we have one. It's well, we only teach Japanese and Chinese literature. And just spontaneously, I kind of erupted and said, you don't teach Indian literature? It's like, and he was kind of, everybody a little shocked at the emotional intensity, but nobody was offended. It was just like, it was kind of funny, like this guy is so attached, you know. And he's laughing and saying, no, we don't teach it. We don't teach it. We should. You're right, like that, you know. And then he said, basically said, well, why don't you all teach it? If you've had you've been a part of the university as, you know, associates, an agreement, we have an agreement, you know, convenio. So he said all the roads to the university are open for you to start giving your own classes for credit. Okay. And from that level, of course, it means it's a fact, you know. So later on, I found that they told me, they said that the actual person who teaches the international language courses is him. So when I was like, you know, exploding, he was him personally. He took a very good humor. He actually was joking. Very nice person. So now we have to get our application in by the end of this month. It's very formal. And we have to have 10 classes. And we have to say what the student's going to learn. How's the student going to be different after he comes out of the class from when he comes in terms of knowledge and also in terms of practical application in life. It's a very good, you know, description of the course they're requiring. How will you evaluate the student's progress? And how will it fit into the general area of the diploma, which is going to be literature rather than philosophy, we decided. And then there will be two university units, be one class a week. And then we have to go around, and when the time comes for the students to make their choices, you know, register. And if we get out there, we're already talking about it. We're going to have three of the ladies are already talking about putting on cow suits, going around in cow suits, and you know, promoting, passing out flyers, take our class, and we're going to use Light of the Bhagavad, and then put the basis like that, you know. And then the second university, Kantuta, which is the National Education University, they're not as prestigious because they're public, and the private universities are more prestigious in some ways, but they're very good, very solid. So they're right across from the temple up in the mountains where we are. So if San Marcos has us on the line to, for a class, they also will accept our application. We already have enough connections. So pray to God, by your mercy, that this can go on, because of course it's going to be right away just an introduction right into the Bhagavatam, from Light of the Bhagavat. And one of the texts probably says, you want to learn more? Study the literature of the Goswamis. And okay, Upadeshamrita, right there. So thank you all very much. And hope someday we'll able to see everybody. Maybe we'll be able to go to Hawaii sometime and see everybody in their physical bodies. So Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai. Maharaj, that was
jai.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Jai.
Balabhadra.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Okay, Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you.
He's giving the classes.
Haribol.